Should Christians be involved in the political process? And if so, what does that look like? Hello and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Rick Scarborough. And he is the executive director of RecoverAmericaNow.org. Rick served as a pastor for years of a major church, a Baptist church. I believe it was in the Houston area. And Rick, why don't you briefly tell us about that, how you actually got involved in the political process, not intending to as a pastor, but because there were some things that were happening of a political nature that were so disturbing, you thought, well, you know, the Christian witness in the political realm needs to be felt as well as these other spheres of life.
Well, I'm happy to. And by the way, thank you for your work, Jerry. I've long admired the faithfulness and straightforward approach you have to calling Christians to their responsibility in the civil arena. I went to First Baptist Church of Pearland on the southeast side of Houston in 1990. I was 40 years of age, prime of ministry, and had one desire, and that was to build a great soul-winning church. And I'm not bragging on myself, but God blessed the early days. We saw over 500 new converts baptized into the church during the first 18 months.
Wow.
But that's when I bumped into a controversy at the local high school. And the short story, of which much has been written and spoken about over the years, is that I discovered they were sponsoring an ungodly school assembly under the guise of understanding this new disease called GRIDS, later because of political correctness, changed to AIDS, acquired immune deficiency syndrome. But in the early days, it was the gay-related immune deficiency syndrome. Well, I sent my associate pastor to cover the assembly because I was a little bit, just a little bit frightened that it might go over the line. And sure enough, it was so far over the line that I hastened down to the fifth of five assemblies that day. Two of my children were in the high school and heard the young lady's remarks. Out of that, I took a recording of her remarks, made them public from the pulpit of our church, and then I took over the school board and everyone. And what I discovered is that we had a lot of great Christians in our church, but nobody was involved in civil society. While a certain segment of our community was serving on the school board, city council, etc., our people basically believed they went to church and paid their taxes. They'd done their duty. And so, Jerry, I began preaching political activism out of necessity. We wound up putting four members on the school board. That changed the direction of that school. We then bumped into corruption at city council. When people found that I would speak to those issues, they started bringing me the stories. And so I got involved in city politics, not in running for office personally, but encouraging our people to be salt and light like God called them to be. And we soon had three positions on the city council out of five. In fact, a fourth member ended up joining our church because he liked seeing me involved in the civil arena.
Nice.
That fourth member now sits in Congress. His name is Randy Weber, and I taught Bible study in his office many times during an 18-month stretch when I flew back and forth and did Bible studies in the State Department and halls of Congress, World Bank, and the Pentagon. It was a thrilling opportunity for me to put my faith in practice in that way. But Christiane Amanpour showed up with cameras. She created a documentary featuring our church. It aired four or five times on CNN, won awards. And she concluded remarks by saying, "Rick Scarborough's gains will be short-lived." Well, your audience should be the judge. Three of our members served in the state legislature. One is still there. One died in office and had a high school named after. And the third is now serving in Congress, Randy Weber. We learned what a difference one church could make. It turned the whole community around. And the great news is, Jared, we continue to win souls. We baptized 2,000 people.
Wow.
During the 12 years I was in that church before launching a national ministry, Recover America Now, to call Christians to do everywhere what we did in Pearland.
Wow. Okay, Recover America Now. What do you actually do, and what is your overall thrust on this idea of Christians and politics, and why have Christians abandoned politics? There's a lot of questions there. Go ahead and wax eloquent.
Well, I will. The main reason I believe Christians have vacated is because there's this myth that has been generated. Two things you don't talk about, that's religion and politics. I heard that around the table when I grew up, and my father wasn't even a Christian, but he embraced that ideology and taught it to me. But the truth of the matter is, once I got involved in pastoring, I began to realize that the left has made a political issue out of every moral issue that we hold dear, whether it's marriage or abortion or adoption. All of these have become political hot potatoes. And if a pastor is not preaching on those moral issues from a biblical perspective, then he's erring in his responsibility. And so Recover America Now was founded to enable me to get in front of as many pastors as possible in the remainder of my life, share with them what we saw happen in Pearland when we turned a community around and impacted the state and now the nation. And that's what I do, whether it's in a group of five pastors or as we recently did, we hosted 300 and some odd pastors and their wives for 3 days at the Gaylord Texan. In fact, 2 months ago, we held that big event, and we were able to educate for 3 days worldview training and enlightening those pastors about the great issues of our day, in which we trust now they are engaging with their churches and mobilizing their people. If Christians do not vote, Jerry, I believe they commit a sin against God.
Wow. You know, it's funny when you mentioned the thing about hot potatoes. There was a book many years ago called something like this, 10 Hot Potatoes That Christians Refuse to Touch, you know, talking about 10 hot issues or whatever. But the book was by Tony Campolo. And so, in effect, you know, all of his answers, I never read the book, but, you know, I know where he's coming from, and he's really coming from a Christian left perspective. We've seen the rise of the evangelical left. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, that's exactly right. Everything they tell us we cannot do, they are doing, and they're doing it right now in the last days of this election cycle. And here's some data that ought to alarm everyone listening to this program. I also am the national spokesperson for a Christian voter registration organization which uses the latest technology. In one state alone, in Michigan, we have discovered in the 8th Congressional District, a contested district, that there are 35 unregistered voters in that one congressional district, and an overwhelming number of them are conservative but just not registered. We found that there were 32,000 unregistered voters in the 11th district. Now, the reason I cite those numbers is if just 10% of those who aren't registered would get registered and vote their values, it could turn the entire national election toward a pro-life, pro-family candidate who has already appointed 200 appellate court judges who are pro-life and now 3 Supreme Court judges versus a candidate who does not embrace our values and will not appoint those kinds of appointments. Christians hold the future of our country in their hands, Jerry, and what they do in this election cycle may determine whether we remain free and continue to have an opportunity to advance the agenda of Christ or through a socialistic / communist takeover. Our speech is limited, our opportunities are short-lived, and eventually, because they control so much power, they can even begin closing down churches, as some are doing, through the COVID virus right this very minute.
Okay, I believe I heard you say 35, but did you mean to say 35,000?
Yes, 35,000. That's a misspeak. That's what I said.
Oh, okay.
But that's the conservative voters in that congressional district.
That were not registered to vote, and therefore they can't vote. And so what you're saying is that we've got to get the Christians mobilized to vote and vote their biblical values. That's the key to everything.
That's right. So the key is the pastor.
Yeah.
You know, as the pastor goes, so goes the church. And so that's why I personally focus on pastors, because I believe, as God intended, they are the under-shepherds. And they're the ones going to be held accountable to God for their silence. But, you know, the good news is God has never needed a majority. He just needs a dedicated minority. And so, and I need to clarify, when I speak about 35,000 unregistered voters in that congressional district, we only threw geofences around the conservative churches. The reality is the over half of those who attend evangelical churches self-identified are not even registered. And of those who are registered, typically only about 60% show up at the polls. And so a vast majority of those who go to our churches are not engaged in the arena, and therefore we continue to lose ground.
When you said earlier that you were talking about the voting, we must vote our values and so forth, but you mentioned the possibility that freedom could be curtailed in a future time if we vote the wrong way or if not enough people of goodwill show up and vote. How would we lose the opportunity to vote in future elections if we blow it now? What are you thinking of there?
Well, we have current information to go from. We experienced the first great awakening at the embryonic stage of the development of the American dream. In the 1700s, there was a robust revival that swept the colonies, as you well know.
Yes.
It resulted in stealing the spine of those farmers and merchants to take on the most powerful military engine in the entire world, Great Britain. And what was the issue? At the center of the issue was the divine right of kings. Throughout Europe, if a king said it, it was law. And King George III was making law in this country that was tyrannical. And so they fought to throw it off. Now, we threw off divine right of kings over 200 years ago, only to see the divine right of mayors and governors take its place in the last 6 or 8 months of this COVID virus, where you've got liberal mayors and liberal governors shutting down churches while they open liquor stores, while they open the big box stores, they shut down the small business. They're picking and choosing winners and losers. It's not a stretch to see that they will shut down the church entirely when they get the power to do it.
Yeah, and for example, we see situations where protesters are allowed to protest with or without social distancing, with or without masking or wearing masks, and yet as you say, churches were not allowed. And in fact, one of the Supreme Court decisions was very disturbing because basically they sided with the liberal governor or whatever of Nevada, and Gorsuch said, in no universe, in no universe does the Constitution say that Calvary Chapel gets trumped by Caesar's Palace, and that Calvary Chapel can't open, but Caesar's Palace can. And that, I thought that was a very important comment that he was making. But that was, of course, the dissenting opinion. So, in other words, his side lost because of John Roberts.
Yes, and Jerry, that's what I'm saying by the divine right of mayors and governors. If you look at New York City and New York State,
we have 1 minute left.
You will see two elected officials usurping power not granted to them by their state constitution and imposing their will on the people with impunity. Same in California. Ask John MacArthur, who used to speak out publicly against the kind of activities that D. James Kennedy and myself have been engaged in for the last 30 years plus. Now he's on our team because his own church has been shut down by a governor who does not have the authority to shut his church down, and he's under lawsuit, threat of being sued out of existence because he's simply exercising obedience to God, who said, "Do not forsake the assembling of ourselves together." That's what's at stake in this election. And that's why Christians must vote. I believe it's a sin for a Christian not to vote, because the Bible says, "He that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is a sin."
Wow. Rick Scarborough, again, the executive director of RecoverAmericaNow.org. RecoverAmericaNow.org. Thank you so much, Rick. God bless you. All the best.
My joy. God bless you.